Summer Joba, San Francisco. This is FieldPod.com, the week in Georgia in English, coming to you from the main branch of the public library in downtown San Francisco. Today is Thursday, the 19th of September, 2013. On this date, in 634, the Rashidun Arabs under Khalid ibn al-Walid captured Damascus from the Byzantine Empire. 1778, Continental Congress passes the first United States federal budget. Now, I don't mean to draw any parallels with today's financial crisis and public mood, but on this date in 1827, 9 years before meeting his fate at the Alamo, in a duel gone awry, Jim Bowie disembowels a banker with his famous knife in Alexandria, Louisiana. 1893, New Zealand becomes the first country in which women can vote in national elections. 1946, the Council of Europe is founded at the University of Zurich. 1959, Nikita Khrushchev is barred from visiting Disneyland on his famous American trip. A great book about his visit to the U.S. called K Blows Top, the title of which refers to what happens when he's told he can't go to Disney because of security concerns. Wonderful book. Everybody read it. 1970, Will Dunbar will be glad to know, was the first Glastonbury Festival. Fascinating actress Frances Farmer, who, by the way, won and took a trip to the Soviet Union in 1935, would have been 100 years old today. Gizo Nishnianidze, Georgian poet and writer, died on this date 2 years ago. Today, it is me, Mark Mullen, and we have a special guest star. Badonevo dakel badonevo, I give you the sage of Stuttgart, the Black Forest badass, Hans Goodbrod. Welcome, Hans.
Thanks, Mark.
Now, some more questions about the forum, on the forum. So we say, we'll post this on the forum. The forum for each show doesn't exist until the very moment I upload the new show. Only then, after it exists, can we post things there, and it usually takes between a few minutes and 15 or so hours at the longest, since our team is geographically dispersed. So, if you are quick to check on those links, they may not be there. We apologize for that, but they will eventually make it there. Check back in, you know, say 12 hours or so. And by the way, yes, that thing where you're posting is in fact the forum, the turquoise boxes on our website. On the forum, we've had some allegations about loan sharks and exorbitant rates, even by microfinance organizations. Disclosure, I am a shareholder in one called Geo Capital. Here's the deal. The rates are high because such a tiny amount of capital comes into Georgia, but they're dropping. If there is a rate cap, the loan sharks will tell everybody to whom they've got loans now and any future loans that they will lend on the basis of a handshake, but that people have to give them the underlying asset before the loan, which means people will transfer houses to different people in order to get cash fast. And the rates will be extremely high, totally unregulated, and virtually everybody will default. If microfinance organizations continue to be heavily regulated, as the government does right now, and they stop talking about all the different things that they're going to do to banks and microfinance organizations related to foreclosures and things like that, things will continue without any bright ideas by various MPs, and the rates will drop themselves and fairly quickly. Keep in mind that the foreclosures by banks and microfinance organization are well below 10% of all foreclosures. Over 90% of foreclosures are by unregulated private lenders, and they should be the real target, not microfinance organizations. As the rates drop, the more efficient and transparent ones and the ones that provide good service will do better. We are honored to have well-known and very cool historian Donald Rayfield write on the forum about the murder of Ilya Chavchavadze. If every single listener will promise to him or herself a favor, to do themselves a favor, and buy his History of Georgia, Edge of Empires, available on Kindle now for those who want, as well as in print, I will read his answers directly. So, I quote, "Who killed Ilya Chavchavadze is pretty well established. Gigla Berbichashvili escaped at the time but enjoyed Bolshevik protection until 1942 when Chavchavadze was officially approved again and he was shot for the crime as an alleged Tsarist agent. The organizer, Dmitry Jashy, was caught and imprisoned. Chavchavadze's widow pleaded not to have him hanged, but was shot later by the NKVD, and his family was refused rehabilitation in the 1950s. Why is not so certain. Berbichashvili and Jashy were closely connected with the Bolsheviks under Orjonikidze and Stalin, but may possibly, as other Bolsheviks did, have collaborated with Tsarist police to remove a move the liberal, detested by all extremes, right and left. Some of Chavchavadze's servants, with a grudge against their master, seem to have been involved too. End quote. So, any brilliant essayists in Georgia with cool facial hair who walk the line between Misha's people and Bidzina's people, watch out as you drive around Jvadi. Any questions you're too shy to put on the forum, be sure to put them in an email to us at tblpod@gmail.com. My Georgian journal and Kvitis Politra column this week is about land tax. As Georgia discusses its tax code and local government, it should consider taxing land rather than buildings. Almost everybody in the world, except the very, very smartest people, tax buildings as opposed to land. Taxing land is simpler and leads to much more effective, efficient, and environmentally sensitive land use. The current system of taxing buildings encourages property speculation and vacant lots. A land tax is the simplest and most effective tax there is. So, on the 15th of September, Ilya II, in his Sunday sermon, stated, quote, "We think less about our responsibilities. We are more focused on our rights and that people have various rights. Rights are good and are needed, and rights should be protected. But everyone should also have a sense of responsibility." He goes on to say, "Very often there is talk of protecting the rights of the minority of the population, and that minorities have rights, etc. Very rarely would someone think that the majority, too, has to be protected. Often the majority is more oppressed than the minority, and that happens frequently to us." He goes on to say, "I want to tell you that Bidzina Ivanishvili is an optimist. He looks to our future with optimism and often presents such arguments which convince others that everything will be all right. He pays a lot of attention to what will happen in the future and how to create new jobs, what should be done in order to revive agriculture. He has very concrete, very real plans about these issues." And he goes on to say, "I also think much about agriculture." He elaborates, "We should not think that someone who came from China, India, or some other foreign country will cultivate our lands. They may cultivate land, but they will do it for themselves, not for us. So we should love the land." End quote from the Patriarch. On the 13th of September, Bidzina's family hosted the Patriarch in their private mansion in Tbilisi. During this time, the Georgian church leader gave the Prime Minister a luxury wristwatch as a gift, which stirred debate on the internet and criticism of the Patriarchate for making such an expensive gift. Judging from the photos posted on Bidzina's Facebook page, the watch was a Ulysse Nardin, a Swiss manufacturer which offers high-end watches. The average price is about $17,000. The model in question seems to be Maxi Marine Chronometer 43 millimeters with a rose gold case, which costs more than Ulysse Nardin watch's average price. If so, it might be in conflict with the law, as the value of this gift is more than an official has the right to take during a year. The total value of the gifts received by an official during a year should not be more than 15% of the official's annual salary. The Prime Minister receives the equivalent of $30,500 annually, which he purportedly donates to charity. Yeah, this is just shocking. Following up on a story from a few months ago when Russian soldiers moved the de facto border 300 meters into Georgian-controlled territory and started installing wire fences, that was in South Ossetia, the soldiers moved back to the de facto border near South Ossetia into the village of Dytsi. Locals say three houses are in danger of ending up on the other side inside Russian-controlled territory. Interpress News reported that Russian soldiers showed locals a map from 1922 and claimed that the territory which they are marking belonged to South Ossetia back then. The local administrator of Ditsy village, Zakaria Vitakadze, said the situation is tense in the village because of this development. According to him, the Russian military threatened him with arrest and detention in Skhinvali if he would not obey. Later, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs appealed to the international community to take measures in order to prevent these illegal actions by Russia in the conflict region. The Interior Ministry might strengthen the patrol of the perimeter of the occupied territory close to the village of Ditsy. James Abturai, the EU monitoring mission and NATO Deputy Assistant Secretary General for Political Affairs and Special Representative for the Caucasus and Central Asia, holder of the longest professional title in the world, later issued a statement expressing concern about the installation of the fences. On the 16th of September, an incident prevention and response mechanism meeting was held in Ergneti. The Georgian and Ossetian sides were present along with UN, EU, and OSCE envoys. The Russian side was not in attendance. The issue discussed included the installation of fences along the administrative boundary line, the restrictions on freedom of movement, the Russian violation of Georgian airspace. It was decided that an informal mechanism would be established to look into livestock issues at the administrative boundary line. The next meeting will take place in Ergneti on the 18th of October. The EU named Toivo Klar as the new head of the EU monitoring mission in Georgia. Klar was previously the head of the Division for Human Resources Policy and Coordination in the European External Action Service, and before that served as a senior foreign policy official in his native Estonia. He succeeds Ambassador Andre String of Consonants, who was in the position since July 2011. The decision comes in the wake of a recent council decision to extend the mission until the 14th of December 2014 with a $26 million euro budget from now until then. Big budget, but good that it's going to be headed by an Estonian, because Tpilpod loves Estonians.
I would just add to that hasn't always been visible, but the Estonian influence, I think, in Georgia has been really incredibly constructive and helpful, also in various crises, and both understanding the real challenges that Georgia has, but at the same time bringing real experience in how to deal with that. So that's a very welcome development.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a small place, and they're certainly good with computers. They were very involved in dealing with the public and civil registry. And let's not forget that the president of Estonia is from New Brunswick, New Jersey. Following up on last week's story about a fake phone call reporting a bomb in the parliament building, there were more than 10 bomb reports to the Interior Ministry's emergency call center. As a result, the building of Parliament was evacuated three times, as were the TV stations Rustaviori, Imedi, and Maestro. Even the head office of the Bank of Georgia and the International Airport in Tbilisi was evacuated once, causing flight delays. Police detained a suspect in all cases. Only a few of them are adults, and they were placed in pretrial detention. Current legislation does not allow officials to punish minors. Now the criminal code will be amended to introduce tougher sentences for this kind of crime. Draft has been presented to the parliament. False terrorism reports will be punished by a fine or by imprisonment from 2 to 5 years. In aggravated circumstances, the sentences may be from 5 to 7 years in jail. If the offender is a minor, there will be sanctions against the parents or guardians.
Just one small addition. One practice that various countries had that unfortunately has fallen a bit out of habit is actually for media not to report on these things, because they're so heavily copycatted that the view is that once you report on it, then the next sort of forlorn teenager will come up with the very same idea. It would be an interesting example and a bit of a test for the media in Georgia, whether they manage to adhere to some such practice, sort of code or practice.
Yeah, they could do the same thing in agreeing not to interview Shalvan Atalashvili as well, too, which would probably, you know, also be, you know, since he sort of feeds on those. On the 14th of September, we're just kidding. Tbilpod.com loves Shalvan Atalashvili. On the 14th of September, three men were wounded in a shooting in Batumi. According to the Ministry of Internal Affairs, a Russian citizen started shooting At the police, a ministry spokesperson said that the suspect was staying illegally in Georgia and was planning to go to Turkey. She said the ministry was informed that a Georgian was hiding a foreigner in his flat in Batumi. Another Georgian was helping the two, according to the investigation. On the 14th of September, police stopped a person in the streets of Batumi and asked him to present an ID. This person brought out a gun from his bag and shot several times at the police. He tried to hide and again shot several times around him, wounding one policeman, an investigator at the Batumi police station. He was he also wounded a civilian who was passing by. Police returned fire and wounded the suspect. The perpetrator and the two Georgians helping him were detained. Later, the Ministry of Internal Affairs stated that the suspect is Yusuf Lakayev. The Russian newspaper Gazeta in March published a list of 88 persons and organizations who, according to Russian law enforcement, are threats to the 2014 Olympics. Lakayev is number 48 on that list. On the 18th of September, the former governor of Mskhet-Emtianete, Cesar Ciocelli, and former deputy minister of economy, Dato Giorgadze, were detained, according to the investigation by the Department of the Ministry of Finance. They were accused of obtaining state property fraudulently and money laundering. The 13th of September, the deputy governor of Mestia, Alexander Khergiani, was arrested for accepting a 300,000 lari bribe, according to the investigation services of the Ministry of Finance. Khergiani accepted bribes from entrepreneurs who had a 23 million lari state contract for construction and rehabilitation work in Mestia. In exchange for these bribes, Khergiani signed documents saying that the work was completed. The 13th of September, former Interior Minister Vano Merabashvili appeared in city court in Kutaisi. Merabashvili is charged in several different cases, including embezzlement of state money through an employment program together with Surab Shiabarashvili, the governor of Kakheti. By some accounts, the prosecutor's office has recorded testimony from more than 30,000 witnesses. Prosecutor Nati Sonkolashvili estimated that at least two more hearings are needed to present all of the evidence. Merabashvili joked about his situation, saying, quote, "They are keeping me on a diet. Do not let my wife in. Do not let me contact women and regularly take me to Kutaisi. I got used to it and accepted what is going to happen to me, and I look on it with humor," end quote. On the 18th of September, the chief editor of the newspaper Kronika Plus, Eliso Kiladze, held a briefing and an announcement that a convict in Georgia's prison had his arm cut off by other prisoners after a riot. Kiladze also presented photos which he claimed are of the prisoner's cut hand, as well as x-rays which show how prisoners take prohibited objects into prison. The ministry replied with a statement that the photos of the cut-off arm was not taken in the prison hospital, but in Huda Shauri Hospital in July 2012. They say the person with his arm cut off was never a prisoner. As for the other photos of x-rays, which show how prisoners take prohibited objects into prisons, the statement says that they were obtained and released by the ministry before Kiladze released the photos. On the 16th of September, BI attended a groundbreaking ceremony for the construction of the Shuachevi hydropower plant in Ajada, where he spoke strongly in support of development of hydro resources generally, and specifically of the large-scale Khudoni hydropower plant in the Svaneti region. Bidzina said that those who are against such projects only stir up noise and do not want the country's development. The project has an estimated cost of $700 million. 80% of the power generated by the project will be exported to Turkey. For those who don't know, Zurizhvanya came to fame in opposition to this project with the Green Party, the first legal Green Party, the first legal political party in Georgia. On the 15th of September, Patriarch Ilya II said in his Sunday sermon that a forest fund will be established, which will be coordinated by Bidzina's wife, Eka Kvedelidze. Bidzina supports the Patriarch's initiative, which will give young people the opportunity to plant trees with Bidzina's money. The suggested amount was 50 tetri per tree. The Patriarch believes that his initiative will help students earn a living while studying at the same time. After interviews with governors from Samegrelo, Zemo, Svaneti, and Guria, Kommersant reports that the number of infrastructure projects in these areas have been reduced, and those that are carried out are done so at a slower pace than in previous years. Samegrelo, Zemo, Svaneti Governor Tengiz Gunava commented that all planned and launched major projects have been halted, including a fire station, the House of Justice building, as well as stadiums. He also commented that the Ministry of Infrastructure promised to implement all these projects, but the launch date is unknown. Channel One turned down UNM's request to place a free election commercial on its channel. According to the statement by the UNM, the party provided six commercials, one of which was from about the unfulfilled promises of the Georgian Dream. 3 days after the application, the channel sent a letter to the party refusing to air the commercials, arguing that the commercials violated the election code. According to Channel One, the commercials must meet the regulations of Georgian legislation, and only one of UNM's commercials meets these criteria. According to the statement, the rest of the commercials didn't provide a clear identification of which candidate was behind it. UNM's video commercials contain statements and promises by the Georgian Dream Coalition about industry and jobs. Each clip ends with a sentence, "Wasn't fulfilled. The dream is not working." The commercials also have text saying that 76 of the 83 promises by the coalition haven't been fulfilled, six are in process, and one was fulfilled. Following up on last week's story about Kvesitadze and Paichadze, on the 18th of September, the two scheduled a briefing, which Gia Kotkotashvili and Irakli Kakabadze from Civil Alliance stopped. They said that Eka Kvesitadze and Dato Paichadze should leave the public broadcaster. There were fights between supporters and opponents of the journalists in front of the public broadcaster building. An interfactional parliamentary group reached an agreement about the recommendations to be sent to the Election Commission for consideration. Members of Parliament discussed the modification or nullification of restriction on media representatives at polling stations during Election Day. The restrictions were enforced during the 2012 parliamentary elections, which limited where media sources could film and capture the voting process. The members of the group said that they were unanimous about the issue and announced that the regulations should be changed or lifted. The chairperson of the CEC, Tamar Shvanya, was present at the sitting of the interfaction group and said that the decision will be made only after consultations with media representatives. On the 17th of September, presidential candidate Nino Borjanadze met her supporters in Akhmeta. Kis from Pankisi attended the meeting with her. The Kis publicly ripped up their Georgian Dream membership papers and moved to Borjanadze's party headquarters several days ago. The supporters made pro-Russian statements, including, quote, "Cheers to Russia. Russia is cool. Europe and America are obeying Russia. And who are we? Russia saved us in 1783 to 1786, and we should be friends with this country. If we have good relations with Russia, Georgia will develop," end quote. On the 14th of September, Misha granted Georgian citizenship to 936 Turkish citizens. According to the president's administration, all the individuals concerned are Georgian for all intents and purposes. On the 17th of September, Misha met ethnic Georgians in Samsung and gave them ID cards of Georgian citizenship. During the meeting with ethnic Georgians, Misha stated that the ethnic Georgians living in Turkey are more Georgian than those who accused Georgia of starting the war in 2020. On the 17th of September, Misha awarded the Presidential Order of Brilliance to managers, architects, and builders who were involved in the construction of airports in Georgia in recent years. The award ceremony was held at the Kutaisi Dato Akhmashenabeli Airport today. By the way, if somebody who works for the Tbilisi Airport puts up stanchions at the check-in counters that will form people into lines, I will personally recommend them for the Presidential Order of Brilliance. The Russian Olympic Committee listed Abkhazia and South Ossetia as separate countries to take part in the Winter Olympics in Sochi. The Georgian government is preparing to send a note of protest. As a reminder, Misha had planned for Georgia to boycott the Sochi Olympics, but the current government decided to participate. Georgia and Switzerland signed an agreement about simplifying the procedure for issuing visas between the two countries. The Swiss Foreign Ministry said the agreement regulates the facilitated issuing of long-term multiple-entry visas for various categories of visa applicants, such as business people, journalists, family members of Georgian nationals who are Swiss residents and recipients of the Presidential Medal of Brilliance. No, just kidding. It also grants a visa exemption to government officials with diplomatic passports. Foreign Minister Maya Pandjukidze signed the agreement during her visit with her Swiss colleague Dieter Buchalter, the federal counselor. Bidzina appointed Irina Milorava as the new chairperson of the Georgian National Energy and Water Supply Regulatory Commission for a six-year term. Milorava served as the Director General of Electricity Systems Commercial Operator, a state-owned company, since 2009. Before that, she was the company's Deputy Director General. She replaces Guram Chalagashvili, whose term expired in August. Parliament passed in June an amendment shifting the right of appointing chairman and members of the GNERC from president to prime minister. President Saakashvili vetoed the bill, but the veto was overturned by Parliament in July. According to the rector of Tbilisi State University, Vladimir Popova, the student self-government will not be funded unless the specific program or project is proposed. The student self-government will not enjoy financial priorities anymore, but any group of students can receive funding if they propose a good project. This, in my view, is a big step forward. The student government at Tbilisi State University and all state universities have always had great power derived from the money they automatically received, which, if I remember, was written into the charter of the university, so I'm not sure how they dealt with that. And it was always a cozy relationship between the sitting government and the rector and the student assembly, which tried to operate for the benefit of its members rather than the student body in general in terms of designating trips and spending that money. So, that said, let's take a look at what gets funded now. According to the Geostat, Georgia's foreign trade turnover was reduced by 0.1% for the first 8 months of 2013 compared to the same period in 2012. The preliminary foreign trade data covers a period from January to August. New data is coming out the 24th. According to the Ministry of Internal Affairs, Georgia had 28% more visitors in August 2013 compared to the same period in 2012. The highest number of visitors came from Turkey, Azerbaijan, Armenia, Russia, Ukraine, and Iran. Visitors from EU countries have also increased in number, especially tourists from the Czech Republic, with Austria up 30% and Poland up 72%. On the 15th of September, an officer of the patrol police found a wallet in Marjanashvili metro station. The wallet contained a check for 2,750 million Iraqi dinars, 2,000 U.S. dollars, 160 lari, and 153,000 Iraqi dinars, as well as other documents. According to the Ministry of Internal Affairs, the owner of the wallet appeared to be an Iraqi citizen named Tiber Ibrahimia. Patrol police officers returned the found sum and documents to the legal owner. Tbilpod.com wants to tip our hat to the Iraqi billionaire Tiber for supporting the Tbilisi Metro. On the 16th of September, the school year began in all public schools in Georgia. This year, for the first time, students were provided with free textbooks. Over 44,000 first-year students went to school this year. Turkish Airlines company Atlas Jet has joined the Georgian market and will now begin offering daily flights to Istanbul beginning on the 2nd of October. Prices for one-way trips to Istanbul start from, allegedly, 77 euros. That will be huge if it's the case. Parliament will stop working in October due to the presidential elections. Among the work remaining, it will have to pass amendments on restricting the powers of the Prime Minister and adopting a set of constitutional amendments. They're considering simplifying the procedures for impeaching some high office holders. In addition to the President, the change will apply to the head of the Supreme Court, members of the government and general auditor of the State Audit Office, and members of the Board of the National Bank. The draft was prepared by Vahdan Khmaladze, MP for the Georgian Dream Coalition and chair of the Parliament's Judiciary Committee. Under current regulations, in order to impeach the president, the parliament must first vote on whether to initiate an impeachment process or not. If the decision gets a supermajority of votes, then the parliament will vote on whether to impeach the president or not. New draft suggests removing the process of voting in order to initiate the impeachment procedures and instead directly votes on whether to impeach the president or not. The meme this week comes from Misha Saakashvili. On the 17th of September, there was a yelling match between Misha and Akhaltsikhe locals. Misha was irritated by a local who criticized the English language sign on a hotel building. Misha yelled at him that Akhaltsikhe used to live in garbage and then asked rhetorically, "Do you prefer to live in garbage?" The main reason for Misha's trip to Akhaltsikhe was to visit Vana Medavashvili's parents. The video of the yelling match will be posted on the forum, an excellent portrayal of a persistent problem for the UNM, voter contempt. And by that, I don't mean contempt of voters for the UNM, but I mean UNM's officials' contempt for all the people that they were designing all these brilliant reforms for. Stuff to read. An article in the Telegraph about a Georgian monk who's lived on top of a 131-foot pillar of rock for 20 years. Levan Sutidze's article on Taboola.ge entitled The Patriarch for New Times, article by Molly Corso on Business News Europe entitled Judicial Progress in Georgia. All these are on our forum. This week's geocapital number is 6.9, which is the magnitude of Georgia's most powerful recorded earthquake, which took place in Racha on the 29th of April, 1991. 200 people died and 46,000 houses and 1,000 factory buildings were damaged. 1,000 factory buildings in Racha were damaged or destroyed. Earlier this week, on the 17th of September, 2013, a 5.3 magnitude earthquake took place in Georgia at 8.09 a.m. The epicenter of the quake was Kvareli. No damage was reported aside from slight damage to roofs. To compare Georgia's 6.9 quake with the world, the highest magnitude earthquake of all times is 9.5, which was recorded on the 22nd of May, 1960, in Valdivia, Chile. The second highest was 9.2, which was recorded on the 27th of March, 1964, in Prince William Sound, Alaska, in the U.S. The third was recorded in Sumatra, Indonesia, in 2004 with a magnitude of 9.1. To look at countries in the region, Russia had a 9.0 quake in Kamchatka, then the Soviet Union on the 4th of November, 1952. In Turkey, Esrikan had a 7.8 earthquake in 26th of December, 1939. Azerbaijan, 6.9 in Chamakhi, the 13th of February, 1902. In Armenia, Spitak had a 7.2 quake on the 7th of December, 1988. Now, as mentioned, we have Hans Gudbrod here. Many of you know him, formerly head of CRRC, an old Georgia hand, currently consulting around the world connected to policy research. Hans, you've been involved in setting up a kiwi farm in Samegrelo. Now, while abroad, you've been involved in several agricultural projects. What are some pearls of wisdom about Georgian agriculture and how it looks from abroad?
Well, I think one thing that's striking is really how complex all of this is and how much of the discussion that you hear in Tbilisi stays on the surface. And so I think one of the things, if you really want to move agriculture forward, is that in a very literal way, you actually do need to get into the weeds.
I can't believe you just said that.
I did. And one of the issues about it is that agriculture gets discussed as this lump item in Georgia, when the reality is you're really talking about multiple different agricultures. I mean, wine is very different because a lot rests on the processing of the grapes and the marketing that you do around it, as opposed to things that are for local production, say the greenhouses, as opposed to things that are have potential for export. So I think right now what we're seeing is, along with a lack of elite engagement on this issue, just a lack of understanding that then also impedes the number of competent managers in that field. And let me take one particular example. I didn't realize this, sort of hanging around Tbilisi, talking to a lot of people for a long time. But, you know, you don't really get a discussion about what you need to export to Europe. And one of the things you need is, for example, a certification called Global GAP. And, of course, there's all sorts of people going back and forth about the regulation you need and the regulation you don't need. But once you look into that, you understand, that this would be very, very complex for small farms. There's actually very little assistance you can get in Georgia. You have to fly people in from Poland that are going to do this for you, because right now there's nobody locally that can certify you on that. And a lot of the certification is actually sensible and things that should be done anyway, like having some farm workers trained in first aid in case some heavy machinery or so falls on anyone's foot. And or say herbicide management, quality assurance, and all of that. But I'm using this as an example just to say that the issues, once you look into that, again, they're more complex. And also one of the things that was striking, which stands a bit in contrast to what the patriarch said, and you know, it's appreciated that people have a very emotional connection to the land. But at the same time, if you actually want agriculture to work and really produce, you have to take a fundamentally different approach. And one of the small things that matters, which the old government, I think, got right, was you have to speak English, because Global Gap's not translated into Georgian, herbicide management's not translated into Georgian. And all of these things actually need sophisticated and contemporary management techniques. This is not some bucolic pretty scene on a wall that often our romantic projections would like us to see.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly will second that about managers that I have invested in farms, and I know there are lots of people interested in doing that, and the problem is finding intermediaries, finding people that can manage farms profitably, or even to the break even point of somebody who can deal with all of these things, that can work with the people that live nearby with labor. But can also talk to investors. There's very, very few people that do that. And, you know, when you look at the number of people going into law or studying economics or whatever else, there, you know, the agricultural university, has had its recent well-publicized complications, probably in part because it's owned by Caja Mendukidze. And was targeted, but even in the Soviet period, and nobody went to agricultural university was where you went because you couldn't get into another university, which is too bad, because a great agricultural university could solve that problem. And Georgia's really way behind most of the rest of the world, including Armenia, in having a university that can crank out agricultural managers. What about the political situation? How does that look in Georgia with a little bit of distance?
I mean, it's interesting to follow it from afar. I mean, you see a lot, whether it's on social media platforms or in other places, a lot of annoyance and frustration in various ways, and still a fairly strident tone. And obviously you see where that's coming from. I mean, what I would hope is that indeed, as some people have suggested, that the UNM in opposition is an opportunity for the country to really develop further. One concern that I have is that the UNM often seems very strident in the way they approach it, that they seem to see their role as, or at least in one big strand of their approach is to demonize the Georgian dream and Bidzina Ivanishvili in particular. I don't find that particularly plausible, and I also think it's a really bad strategy, because as a strategy, what you do when you take that approach, you make yourself part of someone else's story. You put Bidzina Ivanishvili center stage, and then you try and point out how terrible he is, rather than making people join your story and part of that story, part of the things you're trying to put forward as UNM is just that. That you're an attractive alternative. So there's not enough of that, and I think that's really, I think in some ways, is one of the biggest risks right now to the political development.
Anything else our listeners ought to know about? Interesting stuff going on?
Well, just along those lines, something that I found incredibly encouraging was that 2 weeks ago I saw a preview of the new film by Stefan Tölz. Stefan may be known to some of the listeners here. He's a really old Georgia hand. He's been coming to Georgia since 1989, speaks Georgian, has done a number of films that are related to Georgia, had a great presentation at TEDx about documentary films in Georgia. And he's just done a 90-minute, so that's 90-minute, a 90-minute film on Georgia and its path to the West. He's interviewed both Bidzina and Misha. And one thing that's incredibly refreshing was that he makes both of them look very, very good. And so very engaging and very interesting, and doesn't actually try and drag people down in any particular way or show how bad particular aspects are. And I think this is going to be screened on October 22nd on Arte. This is first in French and in German, eventually will be in English and also in Georgian. I'm really looking forward to seeing that screened. I'm looking forward to the reactions in Georgia. I think it's a great piece of art, and like great art, it gives you a fresh perspective on things you already know. So I think that's something that many listeners here for the podcast should also enjoy.
Yeah, Stefan Toltz is certainly an incredibly gifted filmmaker. Georgia is lucky to have him as a resident. I had heard that he was doing a new film, but I didn't know about it. I'm very, very excited to see that. And for anyone that knows him or if he's listening, make sure we get information about where people in Tbilisi or other parts of the world can see that movie. And eventually, where they can buy it. Well, thank you very much for being here, Hans. And we look forward to more visits. On that note, anyone who knows knows Georgia and passes through San Francisco, be sure to give us a call and we can chat. Announcements this week. English language movies at the Rooster Belly Movie Theater across from Parliament are on Saturday the 21st of September, Despicable Me 2 at 5:15. Tickets are 10 Lotti, 50 Tetri. From the 4th to 12th of October, the 74th International Session of the European Youth Parliament will take place in Tbilisi. Approximately 300 participants from 30 different European countries will attend. This session's tagline is Europe on its Frontiers, Deepening Cooperation. This is the first time a Georgian branch of the organization in Tbilisi has gone through the competition and won the right to host. You can find out more about the session at Tbilisi2013.org. I'll also mention that it's a big deal that the European Youth Parliament will be in Tbilisi. And other than from Alliance Holdings, there has been no private sponsors. This is bad. If anybody knows any potential sponsors that would be interested, please let us know. This is quite an important meeting. On the 19th of September till the 8th of October, Tbilisi is hosting the annual Tbilisi International Festival of Theater. The theater festival features national and international theater groups from Canada, Poland, Romania, the UK, Armenia, Italy, Finland, Denmark, Israel, and Russia. You can check out the program on their official website, which is TbilisiInternational.com. From the 24th to the 29th of September, cinema lovers will be given an opportunity to watch the best Polish and Georgian films on a giant inflatable movie screen in Riche, in Tbilisi, the park across the bridge. The event will be free, and audiences will allegedly be provided with comfy chairs. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. That's Tango X-Ray Tango Bravo Uniform Kilo. Our email is spielpod@gmail.com or post to the forum of our website at www.spielpod.com. If any of you decide to just leave it all behind and put a toothbrush and your iPhone and some undershorts and a bandana and tie it up around a stick and throw it over your shoulder and head on the road, you will want to memorize the lyrics to Roger Miller's 1964 classic, King of the Road.
Trailer for sale or rent, rooms to let 50 cents, no phone, no pool, no pets. Ain't got no cigarettes, all but 2 hours of pushing broom. Buys a 8x12 4-bit room. I'm a man of means, by no means king of the road. Third boxcar, midnight train, destination Bangor, Maine. Out suit and shoes, I don't pay no union dues. I smoke old stogies I have found, short but not too big around. I'm a man of means, by no means king of the road. I know every engineer on every train, all of the children and all of the names, and every handout in every town, and every lock that ain't locked when no one's around. I sing trailers for sale or rent, rooms to let 50 cents, no phone, no pool, no pets. Ain't got no cigarettes, but 2 hours of pushing broom buys a 8x12 four-bit room. I'm a man of means by no means. King of the road, trailers for sale, rent rooms to 50 cents. No phone, no boo, no pets. Got no cigarettes, but 2 hours of pushing broom buys a 8x12.